I live in the world and I'll die in the
world. Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our Medical Wednesday broadcast with your host, our Colonel, Ms. Kimberly Purvis. Now, for those of you new just tuning in to us, we are a humanitarian American patriot group, not a militia. Be sure to check out our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7, that's Defenders, with a capital B as in Victor, and two large I's. Now, before you click on that join button, just know we expect all of our members and future members participate throughout all we do here in the Defender 7. Be sure to check out and subscribe to our website, all lowercase letters, www.defender7.com. On our website, you'll find it. We have a store and a donate button. 100% of all sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states. So please, by all means, purchase something from our store or click that donate button. Help us to help you and your community in time of need. Check out and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're on MeWe. Click on Organization, scroll down. Defender 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Now for tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we enjoy it when you call in with your own thoughts, opinions, or just to say hello. And that number to call, area code 914-205-5773. Too shy to talk on the phone? We also have a chat room right here on Blog Talk that is live also during each of our broadcasts. So either way, come on in, participate, yell out, shout out, say hi. Now, without further ado, allow me to bring in your host, our Colonel, Ms. Kimberly Purvis.
Howdy. Who wants a dog? Who wants a
Which
damn
one?
Dog? My fucking great irony.
I want the pit.
Fine, you can have it, but here's the problem. Oh my god. The spawn of Chucky. I've never seen a puppy this neurotic in my life. She's freaking broken. Something is wrong with her. She's just like, hur, like she's trying to, you know, she's playing, but she snips at you, and I was like, I try to calm her down, but I think I know what's wrong with her. Her body is growing faster than her brain.
Yeah.
She still has a small head, but her body is so huge now, and it's like she's going through this teething. And I'm gonna bust a dog. I'm gonna beat her is what I'm gonna do. Yeah, she looks so cute, but no, she's, I swear to God, the spawn of Chucky. That's what she is. The spawn of Chucky. You see, I'm going to make a video so you guys can see her. Oh, my God. She's freaking unreal. Oh, shut up. Nobody cares. And she likes to bite. My arm looks like I got attacked by a cat. No, it was her. Her teeth.
Yeah,
her
you're teeth. A true toy.
Yeah, no shit. You hear her?
Yeah,
this is what
I
she does. That's what she does all day and night. I've cut her nails like 3 times already. She's
Damn.
Only 3 months old. Not even. She'll
Good.
Be 3 months old March 4th. And I've had her since she was 5 weeks old. And this is what I've cut her nails every other week. And they're like razor talons. Don't you look at me like that, you little shit. So, but enough of that crap. My demon's gone, I swear. I'm pretty excited. I know no one likes to have surgery, right? I don't want to have surgery, but look, when it comes down to not being able to walk, I'm done. And here's the thing. And yes, I know. I've noticed a trend. When I have some shit go down, I'm like, hey, fuck it. Let's do our show on this subject because I'm sure somebody else is having the same problem. When this is for everybody, all viewers, I don't care, listeners, if you know there's something wrong with your body, right, and you go to your doctor, and then they're like, and they dismiss you, don't accept, you're fine, there's nothing wrong, or whatever. Don't accept that, because it's your body, and some doctors will do that. You know, not knowing, I don't know. It just could be the personality. One thing that I have noticed about a lot of doctors, when doctors have nurses or other medical personnel as patients, they tend to dismiss you a lot, hoping that, you'll accept their bullshit answer. Unless they're a good doctor,
yep.
And they won't do that, because some doctors do. And when I actually had a long time ago, when I had my gallbladder taken out, I'd only been a nurse for like 4 years, maybe, and my doctors are like, yeah, well, you know, you've only been a nurse for so long and blah, blah, blah. I really think it's your stomach. No, it was my gallbladder. For 8 years, I struggled with gallbladder problems and ended up with 3 walnut-sized gallstones, and then my gallbladder ruptured before I had surgery. So anyway, long story short, they finally gave in and said, okay, fine, we'll do that, the test. And my gallbladder was jacked up. Well, fast forward, you know, to 2 years ago, I had an MRI, and this is what annoys the shit out of me. The VA has good doctors and bad doctors, okay? And so my particular,
no.
I know, my particular doctor has, well, here's the thing. If you can get past your PCP, the specialty doctors are pretty decent. Usually they are. It's your PCP that
sucks. If they're not doing their time.
You know, so my PCP and actually 2 or 3 of the female doctors left Kansas and went to Texas, to the VA in Texas. Well, the bitch they replaced her with, oh my God, she needs to quit being a doctor because she sucks. She may be good to other people, but not to other medical professionals. She's not. She's a very bad doctor and neglects our needs. And I can actually attest to this, not once, but twice now. So 2 years ago, I had knee problems. I've had knee problems for years.
Stay off them.
Huh?
Stay off them.
Yeah. Sure. my knee would buckle all the time. You know, it would buckle. I couldn't straighten it. I couldn't bend it all the way. And so it felt like it was locking up. So that's one of the early signs of a meniscus tear. So she was nice enough to send me to get an MRI, and she sent me to physical therapy, which I only got to half of it because if they don't have enough drivers, volunteer drivers, they can't go pick you up. And we didn't have a vehicle at the time. So he gave me a knee brace and that bullshit Voltaren or diclofenac gel, which does not work for shit. It doesn't work at all.
Nope.
But after a few weeks, maybe a month, the problems subsided and I didn't have to wear the knee brace anymore. And I would only wear it occasionally here and there, you know, and it was fine. Fast forward to now, in January, I could hardly walk, and I had to go buy crutches, and my knee is not really swollen. It buckles. It's doing the same shit, but now it's hurt. It hurts 24/7. There's no – I don't get a reprieve from the pain. The only thing I've found that works is the diclofenac pill, which is a great anti-inflammatory. And they told me to take stop taking the Motrin because it doesn't work. And it doesn't. It really doesn't work. So anyway, I've been to the ER twice in the last 3 weeks. Same problem. So this is why I say you got to pay attention to your body. You have to. If something's not right, you've got to make your doctor listen or find one that will listen. And so the ER doctor said, this shit should have been taken care of 2 years ago. So she made an appointment. She even said herself, she said they're probably going to cancel it, but she would put in for another MRI if she had to. Well, they didn't. They called me this morning. And the nurse for the ortho department said, he said, why wasn't this taken care of 2 years ago? I said, well, I thought it was. You know what she did? She told me that the ortho doctor said he would not see me and would not accept a referral. And the ortho nurse said, that's a lie. They never got one. For me, 2 years ago. So he's like, do you want to see the orthopedist or the orthopedic surgeon? I said, I am going to bypass the orthopedist and go right to the surgeon. Screw this crap. And the ER doc said, and this is what I'm afraid of, beyond the meniscus tear, I think the tendon is torn partially. The one that's on the bottom of your knee, you know, you got one on the top and one on the bottom. And I think the one on the bottom is the one that's tore on the right side. So he's like, I'm probably going to need surgery. And hopefully it's going to be orthoscopic and shit like that. And it's usually really easy. You know, it's, you go back to work a day or two later, you know, and that's it. So
me and Bonnie can fix it.
Yeah, no way. No.
Yeah,
just
we
saying,
can all
save you a doctor bill.
Huh?
Just saying, it'll save you a doctor bill.
Oh, I ain't got one. It's going to be at the VA. I'm not going to have a doctor bill. I'm checking my boss. I already talked to my boss, and she's like, if they won't do the surgery, she will try and get me the insurance as fast as she can so I can have it done. And so I'm going to talk to – I forgot who it was. You know when the VA fucks you over and you can bring a – I can't think of what that paperwork's called. You can sue the doctor. You don't actually sue the hospital or the VA. You sue the doctor. And I forgot what it's called. I got to go through the patient advocate. See, not only did she do it for my shoulder, but she did it about my knee. So I'm going to wait and see what he says on Monday. And then, stop. I'm going to beat the dog or throw her outside.
Say hi to your knee.
Huh?
Say hi to your knee.
Yeah. She keeps biting me, little shit. So, which is funny why I said the topic of the show. Let's do orthopedics, because I'm sure somebody out there has had ortho problems somewhere along the line. And guess what number one is, of all things? A meniscus tear. which is, it becomes chronic knee pain, swelling, stiffness, difficulty extending the knee or bending it all the way is some of the biggest indicators of a meniscus tear. But I'm going to go into each one of them. The second one is carpal tunnel, and that's in your wrist. Rotator cuff tear, had that replaced. Weathers had both of his done. Plantar fasciitis, and that's when your foot becomes flat and the arch of your foot, it loses its arch. But we're going to go in each of them. ACL tear, tennis elbow, ankle and foot sprains, stress fractures, shoulder dislocations, and a wrist fracture. So those are some of the most common orthopedic injuries. And let's go over. Well, they got it backwards. Okay. Hold on. I'm going to have to look up each of these because it's not cooperating.
Must be Lorna's book.
Yeah, I'm on the internet. I'm going to stop. I swear, I give her CBD oil to calm her ass down. Because she's a pain in the ass.
Give her some puppy edibles.
Yeah, well, I give her a CBD oil.
No, give her an edible.
Do what?
Give her an edible.
Yeah, I have to get some of the, okay. So, let's go. So like I said, for the torn meniscus, we're going to start with and go down each one. So I said pain in the knee, especially when twisting or rotating. A lot of times, your knee will give out and feel really weak. You get pain with running or walking long distances. You can feel a popping in the knee. When I feel the popping when you walk, your knee bends a little bit. So that's when I feel the popping. Locked feeling of the knee. When you straighten your knee and it feels like it locks in place and you can't, sometimes you have to like press on each side of the knee to make it where you could actually bend your knee from a locked position. That's what it feels like. Difficulty extending the knee. sometimes you may have to actually straighten your knee passively. Sometimes that happens. Or even you can get to the point where you feel like you have to actually pick up your own leg because it hurts so bad. Sometimes you get swelling or stiffness in the knee. It feels like you can either have swelling or it feels like you have fluid on your knee. Limited motion of the knee. And like I said, you can get fluid in it. Not all the time, but like I said, for the most part, you will get some of these symptoms or most of them. So some of the causes, like I said, forceful rotation or twisting of the knee, like if you're running or walking and you do, you know, if you like you suddenly stop and turn or pivot a different direction. So a lot of times that's how you can tear it. Direct stress on the knee, like kneeling, deep squatting, improper lifting of heavy objects. Earlier today, one of our maintenance guys was carrying a refrigerator up to the second floor. Of course, he had a hand truck, you know, one of those little hand trucks. And I said, don't forget to lift with your back. It's the strongest muscle of your body. Okay, it is not, but it's a joke. And if you don't lift properly, that's what happens. So, damn dog. Let's see. Hold on. So, a lot of times, thing is wear and tear on your body. Everything. Wear and tear. The older you get, the more problems you have. Just like on your vehicle, you'll have your tires wear and tear, your belts, all of that shit. Well, same thing goes with your body. Natural wear and tear will happen on your body. So age-worn meniscus are more prone to tearing. That's the first part of your body that tends to go. Because you only have 2 feet, you only have 2 knees and 2 hips, you know, one, you know, left and right hip. So here's the thing, because when you're born, you crawl and then you go and you're rough. And as you go through your life, your wear and tear on your knees is hard. Really hard. Same thing with your feet. So you have to, you know, that's why you have to worry about that. A lot of times, athletes, like football, tennis, basketball, they tend to have a lot of meniscus tears. Also, being overweight, you putting a lot of stress on your knees. So, but don't get me wrong. You can be not overweight and have a meniscus tear, okay? But the weight, excess weight, does add to the misery. So, excuse me. Practice exercise to strengthen your knees and muscles around the knees. And that's one of the things they try to do when you first, you doctor, and that's the thing that they do. They start with exercise, physical therapy, and things like that to strengthen the muscles around the meniscus. A lot of times you will get a knee brace. And they do work, trust me. They have compression sleeves that are specialized for meniscus tears, and they do work. Sometimes they have what's called a hinge joint on the knee brace. And they're great for that. It says also using shoe inserts to distribute the weight across the knee. Whatever. Have properly fitting shoes. is pretty much the way to go. So some of the complications, of course, we've gone over instability of the knee, persistent knee pain, increased risk of osteoarthritis, and ligament tears. And we're going to go over some of the ligament tears because there's more than one ligament in your knee. And pretty much for all of these orthopedic injuries, ice and heat. Now, when you first injure something, the first thing you're going to do is going to put ice on it, which is the best when you initially injure something. After a while, this is what the physical therapist told me about my shoulder and stuff, ice it, and then eventually you can go to the heat, like a heating pad, or do those rice socks in the microwave. They're reusable and stuff like that. And then after the injury is persistent, then you can go ice to heat, ice to heat. And that's what I was doing, going back and forth. I'd ice it for like 15, 20 minutes, and then I'd do the heat for a little while. So, and it does work. And then there's also, you know, your Bengay, Icy Hot, all that shit. And it does work, but here's the thing. It's a Band-Aid. It's only going to work for so long. And that's when you have to draw the line. That's why you have to find a good doctor to say, okay, I draw the line in the sand, I'm done. You know, it's how much are you willing to suffer and your affliction? So the next one is carpal tunnel. Okay. And I learned something new about carpal tunnel, which is really good. Hold on one second. So I found out about carpal tunnel from when I had my shoulder done that my surgeon was kind of leery of doing he wanted to figure out exactly where my problems were coming from. And I also learned this from a physical therapist about it. So when you have neck pain, nerve pain in your neck, a lot of times it will mimic carpal tunnel. Same thing with your shoulder. It'll mimic carpal tunnel. And so that's what they thought I had. And they did that nerve conduction test and all that BS. And I had all the symptoms of carpal tunnel. Well, I'll be damned, when they fixed my rotator cuff and the nerve impingement, all that pain went away in my wrist and my elbow. So that's why they do the MRIs, the CAT scans, x-rays. They do all of this stuff before they do surgery. But yeah, just because they think you might have carpal tunnel doesn't always mean that it is. Not always.
Another way to tell too is you hold your arms straight out alongside you, and if you lose your pulse within 5 seconds, it's more than likely nerve damage.
Also, they go by your fingers, but which fingers feel numb, and all of that. They go by that too. See, now, like, here's the thing: even with ulnar nerve, that's in your elbow. My hand would turn blue. And when I say blue, I mean like royal blue, like all color, feeling everything. And so it was a pain trying to figure out what was wrong with me. But it wasn't my carpal tunnel, which is good. So with carpal tunnel, I gotta mute my TV real quick. Dog, I'm gonna punch you in the head. Yes, I'm gonna punch a dog tonight. This little heifer doesn't stop biting me. So carpal tunnel is the nerve. There's a nerve that gives you the feeling your thumb and all of your your thumb and your three middle fingers, except the pinky, are numb. When it goes through your wrist, it passes through the carpal tunnel. And it's a narrow path that's made of bone and ligament. And if you get any swelling in your wrist, this tunnel gets squeezed and pinches your median nerve, which causes your symptoms. They can also do a nerve conduction test. And that's when they put that little nerve, those little needles, kind of like acupuncture, in your arm, and they shock it. And it'll tell you by certain feelings, if you could feel it or whatever, that where you have the nerve is pinched. And that's how they found my ulnar nerve, 10 years ago, 12 years ago. So I'm going to have a whole new body on my right side before it's over with. But yeah, that's how they do. Hold on a second. Let me go. So what are early signs? So they typically start out slow with burning and numbness and tingling or pain. And you might feel it in your thumb and any of your fingers, but not your pinky finger. So if you have any strange feeling in your pinky, that's probably not what it is. But the feeling can travel up your forearm. And a lot of times the feelings, the problems can start at night. And yes, I've noticed this too. I don't know about you guys. Do you sleep with your wrist bent, like under your head?
I don't know. I'm sleeping.
Yeah, you don't know, like, your hand will go numb, is what I'm saying. Sometimes, like, I'll either have the palm of my hand. Like, okay, just say you're sitting on your couch, right, or your chair, and your elbow's propped up, and the palm of your hand is on your cheek. Notice how your hand bends backwards?
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Okay, that
yep.
way. Now, also, if your wrist is bent down, and your hand is resting on the top of your hand. That's what they're talking about. And sometimes when people sleep, their hand will go like under their pillow and get bent. That's what they're referring to. I notice that. And my hand will wake up numb. So, but that puts the pressure on that median nerve. And that's where you have that feeling like your hand's asleep. And while you got to shake your hand, rub your fingers to wake it up. So as this gets worse, the symptoms will happen during the day, not just at night. And so that's why they have a lot of times, if you'll notice these ergonomic mouse pads and keyboards for your computer and stuff, and the ergonomic tables, that's because a lot of secretaries get carpal tunnel because of the positioning, and they stay that way for long periods of time. Also, when you drive a car. That's why it's important to, you know, move around a little bit. I don't know about anybody else, but I cannot sit for, like, driving in one position for more than 10, 15 minutes. I don't know. It gets just too uncomfortable. So... So your fingers can feel swollen, even though they don't look like it. Pain and tingling travel up your forearm to your shoulder. You feel like a shock. You just got shocked, and that could go into your thumb and fingers. And sometimes it goes up your arm. So, and then over time, if it doesn't, you know, as it gets worse, it could also affect your grip and your ability to pinch. So you, because of the nerve is, you know, you can't do certain tactile things. You drop things more often due to numbness and weakened muscles. Also, the same thing with ulnar nerve. You drop things as well. So it's not – because the nerve just goes up the arm. It's different place, okay, different name. And you can have the same symptoms for ulnar nerve displacement. And that you have to have an ulnar nerve displacement, and they just move it from where it's at. You have a hard time with small objects, like small buttons when you get dressed, snaps, and things like that. And it's hard to make a fist. So, so in more severe cases, you can lose muscle at the base of your thumb, and you won't be able to tell the difference between hot and cold on your hand by touch, which I didn't know that. But that's pretty scary if you think about it, because you could scald yourself and not even know it. So, yeah. So at what point do you call a doctor? When you're tired of hurting? Pretty much that's the whole thing. When you're tired of hurting and tired of the inconvenience, that's when it's time to call your doctor. On a regular basis. Now, if you have stuff that comes and goes, you know, like a week here, a week there, you know, okay, a little aggravation, do something to kind of strengthen it and then go from there. But if after everything else fails and then it becomes – everything accumulates over time and you get tired of it and you're like, okay, I'm done. I it's time to go to a doctor. So – and depending on what kind of insurance you have, some insurance companies make you get a referral from your PCP. Not all insurance companies do that. Some you could go – I think it's the PPOs. Go straight to a specialist, as long as you know which one you're supposed to be going to. But yeah, you could do that. So other several of these symptoms, like arthritis, ligament damage, neuropathy, wrist injuries such as a fracture, and cervical a C6 through 7. Root compression at the neck. That's what I was talking about earlier. When you have C6 and 7 compression issues, that can mimic carpal tunnel. So that's why it's important. That's why you most doctors will have you do an MRI of the head and the cervical spine. Well, not the head, but the cervical spine and down, because you'll be able to see it more. Which way it's going to go. So sometimes you can get carpal tunnel from other health issues, like amyloidosis, and it's a disease where your proteins collect in your organs, birth control pills, diabetes, pregnancy, rheumatoid arthritis, and thyroid problems. So these are just some of the illnesses that can actually cause you to have carpal tunnel. So be mindful of what's going on with your body. Pay attention. Don't be a pain in the ass and say, well, you know, I'll put it off. Because honestly, it's easier to fix a minor problem early on and then instead of waiting and waiting, and then you have a big, huge train wreck on your hand. Longer recovery time. And more complications. So that's why it is important to pay attention, you know. So let's see. The next, torn rotator cuff. We've gone over this quite a bit, but guess what? We're going to do it again. hold on a second. Rotator cuff pain. Oh, shut up, dog. So with rotator cuff, it's your shoulders, for those of you who don't know. It's a group of muscles and tendons that surround the shoulder joint. and that keeps the head of the upper arm bone within the socket. You got to have all of these things. It's, you got tendons, ligaments, muscles, bone, all that good shit in there. So rotator cuff injuries are common and increase with age, wear and tear, like I said. But a lot of military plates are prone to all these shoulders, knees, ankles. We're just prone to all this crap. So these injuries may occur earlier in people who have jobs. Now, this is also the other thing. So if your job entitled and requires you to have repeated overhead movements, arm motion, like painters, carpenters, things like that, you know, you're constantly up and down, up and down. It's teachers, how they're writing on blackboards, or I should say dry erase boards now. They don't use chalkboards anymore. When I was in the, what grade was it? I think third grade. My teacher had bursitis, and I don't know if hers. And whenever she wrote on the chalkboard, she had to hold her elbow while she wrote because of all the constant writing. Yeah, any job that has repetition can cause wear and tear on any joint. Hold on a second. Go outside. You little shit. Sorry. I got to let the little mongrel outside because she just peed on my floor. You know, this is the only dog I know of that will not use a freaking pee pad. She'll pee on a towel or anything else but a pee pad. I swear, I got a retarded dog. Like I said, I'll give her away. I'm gonna punch this damn dog. She's being a menace to society. And she's going to go. I'm trying to give her time. Like, she's been, you know what? You can stay in the kitchen. Sorry, guys.
What kind of dog is it?
A Great Pyrenees. A great pain in my ass. That's what she is. She's only not even 8 weeks old yet. Not even 12 weeks. No, she is 8 weeks. Four, eight, 12. Yeah, she'll be 3 months old on the 4th. And she's already gained fucking damn dog weighs about 35 pounds already. She's not quite as tall as the other dogs yet, but she's getting there. But she's a pain in the ass. I guess I love her. I don't know. She's driving me insane.
Hi, guys. This is Phil. Okay. Just want to chime in and say hello.
Phil from China.
Hello. Chime in.
Ta-ding.
So, anyway, yeah, physical therapy. Like I say, physical therapy is the first go-to, they always say, anyway. It helps improve flexibility and strength of your muscles surrounding the shoulder joint. And for some people, the exercises will actually help strengthen and gives you more stability. But not everybody, it works. So depending on the extent of the damage, I should say. So sometimes rotator cuff tears can happen from a single injury. I mean, you can have a car accident or anything like that, or any type of injury, and do it. So, and most of the time you're going to go see a doctor right away anyway. But other times it's a wear and tear thing. So a lot of people associate the pain with a rotator cuff tear as a dull, deep ache in the shoulder. Disturbed sleep. A lot of times you can't lay on whatever shoulder it is. So if it saves your right shoulder, you can't lay on your right side. It causes more pain. Sometimes you can't lay on your back. It all depends on you. Makes it difficult to comb your hair or reach behind your back. Put on a bra. Wash your hair. So whatever you have to do to raise your arm or put it in a certain direction, it could cause problems for that. Also have arm weakness. So now this next one says some rotator cuff injuries don't cause pain. Now, I do believe, if Phil, correct me if I'm wrong, if your rotator cuff is completely torn, it's not going to have any pain, right?
Oh, there'll be pain because you're trying to use muscle that's not working, and usually it rolls up into a ball, and you have a big old lump in your arm too, so that can cause pain as well. Yeah. So I've never seen a rotator cuff. Now, partial tears, you can have partial tears that don't cause pain. Most people have a partial tear and don't realize it.
Oh, okay. Well, then mine must have been a doozy because, oh, my God, I don't know about Weathers. He never really said on his. Was it his from work? From what
yeah.
he does, Bobby? Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Hey, Susan again.
Yeah.
Didn't Weathers, wasn't his both his rotator cuff tears because of work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he had a bicep tear
yeah.
because of overcompensating and jacked up. So, yeah, I mean, that's why I say
right.
pay attention because one injury can cause another one.
Well, you got to have a bicep to wreck it.
That's true. If you got no biceps, you ain't going to wreck it. So the risk factors, age is always a risk factor with everything. The older you get, everything starts to fall apart. Okay. Some sooner than later, depending how rough you are on your body in life and what you do. So rotator cuff tears are most common in people over 60, unless you're really active and you just, you know, whatever. Like I said, some occupations, the jobs that require repetitive overhead arm motions, like I said, carpentry, a house painter, things like that can cause. Now, wouldn't like football players or actually quarterbacks, baseball players, wouldn't they be at a higher risk for rotator cuff tears?
Yes and no. The reason I say no is because they're more in shape.
Okay.
So they're more, you know, physically fit. So they have the stronger muscles and the thicker tendons.
Oh, true, because they're always working out. But they can still get, you know, broken.
Sure. You could get a rotator cuff tear from just sleeping on your arm on your side at night.
Really?
Yeah, people put their
How could you do that? I mean,
they put their arm up over their head, right, when they sleep
okay.
or under a pillow, and then, you know, when they wake up and they move it, it'll tear because osteoarthritis in a shoulder
oh.
joint puts bone spurs, and those
oh,
bone
true.
Spurs can tear the tendons as you're rotating the arm, and a lot of times it's because a lot of people don't drink enough water and they're dehydrated. They've got a lot of wear and tear damage in their arm.
So this one was saying in certain sports, I can speak English, they're saying baseball, tennis, and weightlifting. Now, yet those are, but I could see weightlifting because if you're doing heavy, heavy weights, yeah, I don't care how strong you are, you can always tear something. You know,
I had a 400-pound guy went to get into the pickup truck, and he put his arm on that little handrail that helps you pick yourself up in the truck, and he ripped his biceps tendon from his own weight.
Oh, damn. That just sounds painful.
It was. Poor guy.
And family history. I didn't know. I mean, I didn't – I was kind of – says there may be a genetic component involved with rotator cuff injuries. I don't know. I mean, could that just be because you're susceptible? Because if the muscle or the tendons aren't strong enough, or
sure, yeah, it could be. You could have a genetic disorder. You could have myasthenia gravis. It could be a number. You could have chronic tendinosis. You could even get like chlamydia and end up with reactive arthritis, causing inflammation of the tendon and easy to tear. So there's a lot of different, causes. It's very common in the elderly, that's for sure.
Oh yeah.
Because they're more dehydrated and they have less collagen in their body, and so a lot of drying going on, a lot of vitamin D deficiency and calcium deposits in the tendons because there's no vitamin D to move the calcium where it's supposed to be. I think we've talked about the importance of vitamin D before.
Oh, yeah. Which that reminds me, I got to get more vitamin D.
Yeah. And omega-3. The omega-3 is something else, too. Omega-3 helps help you in the process of building the tendons. It's real important for the myelin sheath that covers the nerves of your, all the way from your brain down to your toes. So the omega-3 helps rebuild the myelin. That's the insulation of the nerve. So omega-3, vitamin D, and those are like two of the most important vitamins and minerals, I would say that.
And magnesium.
Magnesium's good for the muscles, but it's also, depending on the type of magnesium, if you get the wrong type of magnesium, you're going to get diarrhea because it's a laxative. Yeah, magnesium citrate is a very good laxative, fast-acting. The oxide also is, acts. You want to get the gluconate or the glycinate. Those are the good ones for the muscles. And for the nerves,
I've been taking that.
The B12 is good for the nerves. I give a lot of my pain patients what they call the triple threat. It's my nickname for it. I give them the magnesium gluconate, 650 milligrams, with the naproxen sodium, 500 milligrams. That's taken twice a day with food. And I give them the Voltaren gel, which is a diclofenac sodium 1% gel, topical, non-steroidal, anti-inflammatory. And so those three I call the triple threat, and it actually does the body a lot of good by reducing inflammation, provided you don't have bleeding ulcers, gastritis, or an NSAID allergy.
Yeah, the hospital just took me off of, they said, stop taking Motrin, Aleve, all of that. Put me back on my diclofenac pills because it's the only thing that's touching the pain. And they said alternate with Tylenol, but I also take the magnesium that you were telling me about.
The gluconate.
Yeah, I'm almost 100% sure I'm going to have surgery on my knee. I finally got an orthopedic. I got that consult for Monday. But But finally.
MR. Did you have an MRI already?
Yeah, 2 years ago. They said I had a meniscus tear.
That was 2 years ago, but you re-injured it since then, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it's the wear and tear of me walking. Huh?
Yeah. You need a new one.
because I can't even bend my knee, and I can't – if you were to put your knee on your bed to get on your bed or the couch or whatever, I can't do that.
Uh-huh.
I can't have
any
weight on my knee. Yeah. So –
Have you ever heard the saying –
Huh?
Have you ever heard the saying, can't see, can't pee, can't bend a knee?
Yeah, you told me that. I could pee and I could see. So
conjunctivitis, urethritis of the urethra, and reactive arthritis of the joints, that's a sign of a chlamydia infection.
I know, but I could see and I could pee, so that's not the problem.
You just can't bend the knee to climb a tree, huh?
I can't bend, exactly. I can't even bend the knee to climb upstairs. Okay, I don't even go up on the second floor of my job. Well, now the elevator's fixed. Now I can. I wouldn't even go upstairs. I'm like, guys, come downstairs. I can't go up there. So, The next one is plantar fasciitis. It's one of the most common causes of heel pain, and that involves inflammation of the thick band of tissue that runs across the bottom of your foot. That connects the heel bone to the toes. And plantar fasciitis commonly causes the stabbing pain that usually occurs with your first steps in the morning. And as you get up and move, the pain normally decreases, but it might return after long periods of standing or when you stand up after sitting. I guess a lot of soldiers have plantar fasciitis too. That was a big thing when I was in basic training, and they have you stand on this. At least I know in the Army they do this before you get your boots, so they know exactly what size you need. You have to stand on this thing, and it shows your foot impression. And my foot was almost flat. I wore flip flops so much I had never. They don't have arches, and so I lost a lot of the arch in my foot. And they thought I was going to end up with that, but I put those inserts in my boots to keep my feet from going flat. But a lot of soldiers, a lot of cops have plantar fasciitis.
A lot of sailors got it too for boots on metal decks.
Oh, is that what causes that too?
Yeah, well, what causes it a lot is that, okay, so say you have an arch in your foot, and as you're walking, that arch is flattening, and then it's retracting, and then it's flattening, then it's retracting, and, it, you know, all the time. And sometimes those arches will stretch out, and you'll have what they call fallen arches. And the weight distribution on the foot is not as even. So the foot, when you're standing on one leg, you'll rock. Your ankle will rock. And you don't realize it, even when you're walking or, you know, standing, as you're alternating your foot, it's actually rocking on a micro scale, and it's causing that arch to flex up and down. And it kind of makes the plantar fascia inflamed, which causes a lot of that plantar fasciitis. Very common in your paratroopers, too, you know, the hard landings on the feet.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of those folks have it as well. But it's just from stretching out the arch of the plantar fascia. The arch is nothing but the plantar fascia with a tendon coming up off the ankle to pull the plantar fascia up to create the arch.
And they do make braces, and that supports the because we had to when our facility doctor came in, a couple of the guys had the same problem, and they both described the same exact thing. So he prescribed an ankle brace, well, it's an ankle foot brace, to wear at night, and it supports that fascia underneath the foot, so they won't have that pain. Problem is, a lot of insurance companies don't pay for braces, any orthotic braces and stuff. So it's really hard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, age. Some of the risk factors: age. Most common between 40 and 50, certain types of exercise, any activity that places a lot of stress on your heel and attached tissue, such as long-distance running, ballet dancing. I didn't realize that, ballet dancing. Aerobic dance can contribute to the onset of plantar fasciitis. How could ballet, when they're always on their toes, though? And not
just think about stretching of the arch.
Oh, so they're really stretching it. Okay, yeah. Foot mechanics, flat feet, a high arch, or even an atypical pattern of walking can affect the way weight is distributed when you're standing and put added stress on the plantar fascia. I noticed this, like, especially when my son, when he was growing up, the way he walked, and I have the same problem, but right now it's only with my right foot that I've noticed this. If you walk, and both of us walk towards the instep, where most of the weight is on the inside of the heel, You know what I'm saying? Like the inside of the right heel wears down faster than the rest of the shoe. And that's, I don't know what causes that. If you know what I'm saying, like on both shoes, sometimes the heels on the inside wear out faster than the rest of the shoe.
True. And if you got foot drop, you'll notice the tip of the shoe has more scars on it than the other shoe,
yep.
The opposite shoe.
Yeah, that's the other thing. A lot of elderly, well, not elderly, well, I guess, yeah, get foot drop. And once they stop, and here's the other thing, once they stop walking, they'll put their shoes on and their feet go straight down. And then they just droop straight down. And do they make special shoes for that? Or for foot drop?
Yeah, they have an ankle brace that prevents your foot from dropping down.
Okay. Because I've always seen, I couldn't remember what it was. I've always had one person, that's been a couple of years, that had, she had that problem, and she was a fall risk. And they had to move her bedroom downstairs because she kept tripping, not being able to go up and down the stairs with the foot drop. Obesity, like I said, it's going to add strain to all your joints anyway. So, yeah. We know us fluffy ones, we got to lose weight, so. occupations that keep you on your feet, factory workers, teachers, construction, anyone that's on their feet all day. Now, like, in the medical field, apparently, according to some doctors, walking up and down the halls 50, 60, 70 times a day is not exercise. I beg to differ, but I'm going to argue that point. But a lot of nurses on their feet all day long, depending, of course, on where you work and what kind of facility that you work in. But I will argue that point till the day I die. let's see, torn ACL. That's another painful injury.
Sports.
Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, isn't there more than, I mean, there's the ACL, the MCL, and the LCL?
Yeah, you have an ACL, you have a PCL, you have an LCL, and you have an MCL. You have, on each side of the knee, you have a ligament. The LCL is a lateral collateral ligament. The MCL is a medial collateral ligament. Now, within the knee joint where the meniscus are located, you have the anterior collateral ligament, which prevents the lower leg from moving forward, the anterior. And there's also a posterior collateral ligament, which prevents the lower leg from moving backward. So the laterals on the sides prevent the side-to-side motion of the knee, and the ones on the inside prevent the front and back motion of the knee.
Now, is the ACL the most common?
ACL is the most common when you're, like, say you're running and you stop all of a sudden. And you're up, you know, your upper part of your leg wants to continue going forward because of inertia, and that tears that ACL. It's the most common sports-related injury of the knee.
Yeah.
But if you get hit from the side, you know, it can bend the knee, you know, outward, and that can tear your medial collateral. If you hit from the inside, you can tear the lateral collateral. So your LCL and your MCL are on the outside of the knees. The ACL and PCL are on the inside of the knees.
And where's that? Yeah, we're just saying sudden stops, basketball, soccer, football, downhill skiing. Well, I guess I can see that. So a lot of times you'll feel a pop sensation in the knee when the ACL injury occurs. Your knee could swell, feel unstable, and become too painful to bear weight. And depending on the severity of either one of those, the treatment may include rest and rehab exercises to begin to regain strength and stability. Now, with any of those, if any of those partially tear, at what point do you need surgery? Usually.
On partial tears, when it affects your gait.
Okay. So, I mean, can a partial tear repair itself, or do you just build re-strengthening everything around it to
you
help?
That's why physical therapy is always the first thing. You want to strengthen up everything. Yep.
It's once you, like you said, once your gait is affected and hobbling or gimping, limping or whatever. That's,
exactly.
Okay.
When it affects your activities of daily living and your quality of life.
Okay. I mean, it's kind of like now with pains like that or with issues like that, you know, like when it's when the weather changes from cold or hot to cold or the barometric pressure, like when it rains. Now, is that mostly just with arthritis pain, or can that also be with any of those pains?
It could be with a lot of those things. It's very commonly associated with arthritis. It's because of the barometric pressure changes that are forcing down on the body. As a cold front approaches, the pressure gets lower and lower and lower and takes pressure off of the body. And then once that cold front pushes through, high pressure comes in, and that higher pressure is pushing down more on the body and therefore increases the pain of arthritis, because arthritis is generally associated with lack of cartilage around the bones, decreasing the joint spaces between the bones. And so if you put more atmospheric pressure on a person, that's going to push their bones closer together, increasing the amount of pain from their arthritis. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because everyone asks me, because we go from warm days to cold days, back and forth. We got bipolar weather. And I did notice. There's a different, like my knee will, or at the time, like last year, my shoulder, oh my God, every time there's a weather change, the rain, back and forth. And it's so funny, especially this facility, the older people who have a lot of arthritis and stuff, you could see they're all rubbing a knee, a shoulder, an elbow, something. And it's like, you can really tell. When the weather changes. So some of the symptoms, like we've said, you can feel that loud pop or popping in the knee, severe pain and inability to continue activity that we talked about, rapid swelling, loss of range of motion, and the feeling of instability or giving away, like your knee will just feels like it just gives out with weight bearing.
Well, if you hold your knee cap, the patella, and if you flex your knee back and forth, and you feel grinding, we call that crepitus. And if you feel that, that's an indication of osteoarthritis or a loss of cartilage on the patella.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Yeah.
That really is. Yeah, you don't want to feel things or hear things when you're moving.
Right.
Joints. Yeah, it's
same
not like.
Same thing with the shoulder. How they do like a field goal sign for whenever they kick the football through, where they hold the arms. Where if you have your arms parallel with the ground and then you put your hands straight up, kind of looks like a field goal, right?
Yeah.
Well, and then you keep your arms parallel to the ground and put your arms straight down. If you hold your shoulder, and when you're rotating your shoulder back and forth and you feel grinding in there, you got rotator cuff issues and possibly arthritis as well. You got that crepitus. You can have
You don't really want to feel that stuff or hear it.
Yeah.
Not good to hear.
It happens every time. It's worse if you can hear it.
Oh, I know. Because everyone around you is like, oh, my God, I heard that.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I want to address this as a wives' tale, a myth, whatever, or truth, okay? And I don't know about you guys, but growing up, every time you crack your knuckles, okay, we were always told if you don't stop doing that, your knuckles will get bigger. If you don't stop cracking your knuckles. How much truth is there to that, or not at all?
The problem with that is it introduces air into the joint space, and it does damage the cartilage, and you can develop osteoarthritis from doing that.
But can it make the joints bigger?
Well,
rheumatoid arthritis.
Rheumatoid arthritis makes the joints bigger, not cracking the knuckles.
No, I know, but that's what they're inferring that.
It generally doesn't make the joint, the knuckles bigger, but it can lead to arthritis of the knuckles, and so you'll get something what they call the carpal metacarpal joint squaring, and you can end up getting Heberden's and Butcher's nodes, which are two little dots on like the proximal and the distal interphalangeal joint.
So what causes people when they crack their neck, their back, their knuckles, their joints, what causes that to where you have to do that? I mean, when you move, is everything just crack? Huh?
A lot of times it's just a tendon or a ligament sliding over a bone and making that popping sound.
Oh, okay. Oh, sometimes it feels like it's trapped air. I don't know if that's what it's – I know it sounds stupid, but it just feels like, you know, mostly mine is my fingers, my knuckles that do it. But I can hear people and they'll crack their neck, their shoulders. I'm like, oh, my God. It just sounds like Rice Krispies is what it sounds like.
Yep.
Okay.
But I don't know what causes the sound, but I do know for the most part the sound is going to be caused by the tendons and the ligaments sliding over the bone as you move them, causing that popping sound.
Okay, cool. So back to the ACL. Some of the causes, the ligaments are strong bands of tissue that connect from one bone to another. The ACL, one of the two ligaments that cross in the middle of the knee, connects your thigh bone to your shin bone, and that helps stabilize your joint. Don't they cross? They crisscross?
Yeah, they crisscross.
Under the knees? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what makes the stability, is the fact that they crisscross?
Like I said, exactly. One ligament is to prevent the knee from moving too far forward at the joint, and the other is to prevent the knee from moving too far backward at the joint.
And a lot of times, like you were talking about, suddenly slowing down and changing direction, momentum, you know, your foot's put in place, part of your body wants to go one way and the rest of it wants to stay there. That's what causes you having pivoting with your foot firmly planted, landing awkwardly from a jump. Yep. Stopping all of a sudden and receiving a direct blow to the knee or having a collision like a football tackle, a car accident, especially if you have your knees bent or like – this is why they tell you not to put your – like a lot of people will put their knees up, their feet up on the dashboard. Don't do that. Because I've seen pictures of how much damage that does. It's horrible. So apparently, being female has a higher risk of ACL injuries, possibly due to the difference in anatomy the muscle strength and hormonal influences. Participating
in
certain sports.
There's not much difference in anatomy on the knee. I don't get that at all.
I don't either. I'm going by what Mayo Clinic said, but you're right. But muscle strength.
Yeah, muscle strength, yeah. But as far as anatomical differences, the knee and male and female are identical. The muscles are identical.
Just some are bigger or smaller than the others. I mean, that's the only thing.
True. Yep, true.
They need to
not these days.
Article.
Not these days.
I know, because now these days you can't assume anything.
No.
certain sports, like we were talking about, soccer, football, basketball, gymnastics, pretty much those sports kind of suck on your body after time. It's probably why you need to retire in your mid-30s. Poor conditioning, using faulty movement patterns such as moving the knees inward during a squat. Well, that just, you know, don't want to do that.
Sounds like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Dak Prescott.
Huh?
Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Dak Prescott. They all need to retire.
Well, yeah. But wait a minute. But don't – how old was Peyton Manning and what the hell is it? Brett Favre? Some of these guys stayed into their 40s, didn't they?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
I thought Brett Favre, he retired like 3 times. I thought he was in his almost his mid-40s when he retired. I could be wrong, but I knew he was up there.
Yes, he was in his 40s.
That's what I thought. But I'm saying,
age is just
I mean,
a number.
It is. As long as you're physically fit, what does it matter?
True.
Now, hockey players, they actually can retire older. I've seen some hockey players that retired in their late 40s, early 50s. Of course, this was 20-something years ago, and now the sport has changed. And you're not going to see many 40-something-year-olds playing hockey. You're not. Wearing footwear that doesn't fit properly. Wearing footwear that doesn't fit properly can affect anything. Can cause problems
with
anything, not just. Yeah, high heels mess up your spine, right? Is it your spine?
Yep. They mess up your spine and your knees and your hips.
Depending on the height of them, too.
Yep, and the ankles also.
Yeah. Using poorly maintained sports equipment. Playing on artificial turf. Well, I guess so. I mean, it's
yeah,
not
that's
real.
A big issue these days. Yeah, that's a big issue these days with the NFL. They're talking about that.
Why? Because it moves?
It doesn't give as much. It's harder.
Oh, okay. But people who end up with an ACL injury are at a higher risk of osteoarthritis. It may occur. Arthritis may occur even if you have surgery to reconstruct the ligament. So you still end up with it.
Well, what is osteoarthritis? That's the thing. What is it? How do you define it?
Huh?
What is osteoarthritis?
It's arthritis of the bone.
That's the technical definition, but what is it for real?
Hold on. It's a silent disease that weakens your bones and makes them break. That's osteoporosis. I said osteoarthritis, damn it.
Yeah.
I did not say I just put that in there. Hold on. Oh, here it is. It's a degenerative joint disease that worsens over time, resulting in chronic pain.
Correct.
Joint pain and stiffness can become severe enough to make daily tasks difficult.
Cool.
In a nutshell.
That's like the layman's term, but what osteoarthritis is, so you have a clear understanding, every bone in your body is covered in cartilage. It's an insulator. It's a protector. It allows to keep spaces between the bones. When there's damage to the cartilage, the bone becomes exposed. The body cannot repair the cartilage very well, and it ends up making deposits of calcium in those spaces where the cartilage is damaged. Those calcium deposits and the damaged cartilage decreases the joint space between the bones, and therefore that is osteoarthritis. So in a nutshell, any damage to the cartilage surrounding the bone can become osteoarthritis.
Very good.
In a nutshell, where'd they get that term from? Golly.
In a nutshell? You know, I don't even know. okay, hold on. Tennis elbow. Now, just because they call it tennis elbow, that doesn't mean you get it because you play tennis. Or is that why they used to call it that?
Well, it's commonly associated with tennis, and the opposite would be the golfer's elbow. But it's basically lateral epicondylitis.
Yeah, I mean, because I know it says that, hold on a second. Man, they got braces for everything. Okay, we'll go tennis elbow here. So, yeah, like you said, epicondylitis is a painful condition that occurs when the tendons in your elbow are overloaded, usually by repetitive motions of the wrist and arm. Despite its name, athletes aren't the only people who develop tennis elbow. So anyone that has a job that feature the types of motions that can lead to tennis elbow, plumbers, painters, carpenters, butchers, you know, et cetera. And the pain of tennis elbow occurs primarily where the tendons of your forearm muscles attach to a bony bump on the outside of your elbow. So, and the pain can spread to your forearm and wrist. That's because
it affects the nerve from either the ulnar side or the radial side.
Radiate. Pain should radiate away from where it originally hurts. Do what?
Radiculopathy is another word for radiate.
Oh, okay. So, like everything else, rest and over-the-counter pain relievers often help relieve tennis elbow. Like I said, we start with the anti-inflammatories, the ice, the rest, compress, elevate, whatever you want to say. Then you go to your doctor. You know, once your daily activities of daily living are affected, then you need to go see your doctor or a doctor. The pain associated with tennis elbow may radiate from the outside of your elbow into your forearm and wrist. Pain and weakness may make it difficult to shake hands or grip an object, throw in a doorknob, hold a coffee cup. Quite a few things make it hard, like carpal tunnel and the ulnar nerve.
No, carpal tunnel is the medial nerve.
No, I know, but we were talking about it says dropping objects. I was dropping empty plastic cups that I could not hold ice in a cup, plastic cup. I was dropping it.
That's usually a medial nerve neuropathy if it's not coming from the C6, but the ulnar neuropathy is generally associated with an elbow injury.
Oh, yeah, I had that. But, before I had my rotator cuff, and this is the reason why he wanted me to have so many, like the MRI and all of that stuff done, because they were like the, with a lot of the studies they're doing. That some
yeah,
of the
nerve conduction velocities and the electromyelogram are necessary. EMG, NCV, that's one of the places where you can determine where the neuropathy is coming from.
Yeah, and they see, and when he did, he's saying if I had all that nerve, a pinched nerve in my neck, that was also causing false carpal tunnel. What, you know, he said he wasn't sure. But once he fixed my shoulder, all of those problems went away.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah, and there's something that comes out of the neck called the brachial plexus, and it's a big old group of nerves. And if you do have problems in the neck, you could have a lot of different issues.
And that's why the dry needling really works. And they when they did mine on my neck, my elbow, my shoulder, my forearm, they did all of it, and it does. It's an immediate thing, and mine lasted for weeks at a time. But the thing is, with any type of treatments that you do over time, it may fix the problem, and it may not. It may be just a Band-Aid, and, you know, unfortunately.
True.
But
even in interventional pain management, which is, you know, I do that when I give steroid injections into a joint, it serves two purposes for the doctor. One, it's either going to be therapeutic and help, or it's going to be diagnostic and tell the doctor that it's not where the problem is, it's somewhere else.
Yep.
And the theory go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The theory behind it is the whole point of the steroid is to reduce inflammation in the body. And if you can reduce inflammation where the body's not throwing everything it owns at that problem because of the pain and because of the adrenaline from the pain, reducing the inflammation will allow the body to put what it needs into that joint and not everything it owns. And that allows it to repair the joint better. That's the theory behind those shots.
Kind of like your body goes in chaos mode and it's like freaking out and it's like,
right,
and like
exactly.
You say,
when
throwing
you're
everything at it. Yeah.
Yep. When you're
see,
in pain,
like from
everything you
for
got
me,
is
those,
coming in that direction.
Yeah. And for me, once he fixed one problem, it kind of like the neck problems, the nerve pain, the elbow and the wrist is gone. So basically everything I had was in the shoulder. And that was deflecting out everywhere else, which thank God.
True.
Dry needling is amazing. It really is. It's one of those things. And TENS units, using the TENS unit really helps a lot with a lot of nerve pain.
For people with chronic pain, instead of taking lots of medication or getting surgery, and the TENS unit does help a lot, then we have what they call the spinal column stimulators. And those are basically TENS units that's implanted underneath your skin, and you have a remote control, and you can adjust the stimulation you're receiving. But we can get right to the pain centers instead of just kind of guessing what they do with the TENS unit.
So how long do those last?
Well, they change the battery about once every 10 years.
Oh, okay. No,
and
a friend of mine
yep.
who was in, we went to Basic and AIT together, and she had one implanted. She could no longer walk. And
The implanted?
Before,
okay.
Yeah, that's why they put it in. And it was a shot in the dark for them to do that. She could, I mean, barely walk. She had wheelchair living every day because she could hardly, I mean, barely walk a few feet. And I guess she got really hurt. I don't know where she got hurt while she was active duty. I don't know what happened. But they put one of those nerve stimulus things in her back. And she's able to walk and have a normal life. She was able to have another child. So even carrying,
that's amazing.
It is. She was in tears all the time. Chronic pain, and she was on the verge of giving up on life. She really was. And that nerve stimulator really helped her body. And so I'm really glad she did it. Everyone was begging her to do it. I mean, it's your last ditch effort. You might as well. So, but it's good that they do work. Let's see. Oh, so the risk factors, of course, age, usually 30 to 50 year olds, repetitive jobs with motions of the wrist, like plumbers and painters, you guys, your jobs suck. Plumbers, painters, or carpenters, you run the risk of all these different joint problems and injuries. So, unfortunately. And, of course, tennis, I guess, because of the name. When did
piano
they decide to stop calling it? Huh?
I'm just kidding. When did they decide what?
When did they decide to stop calling it tennis elbow? Oh, she's in there.
Well, they still do. They still call it that, but it has a technical medical term.
Yes.
I believe it's a lateral epicondylitis. And then the golfer's elbow, I think, is the medial epicondylitis, I think.
Oh, okay.
But they still call it that.
Oh, well, no, I know. And because I heard someone say that one time. They're like, but I don't play tennis. And the doctor's like, you don't have to play tennis to get it.
True. It's just a nickname. Yeah. It's like pink eye. That's not the name.
Oh, I know. Your eye really is pink sometimes. It does turn pink. One of my residents looked at me. He goes, I think there's something wrong with my eye. I'm like, yeah. It's called pink eye, dude. You got pink eye in both eyes. He's like, yeah, but I've been – he's like, God love him. I think he's had one too many TBIs. He's like, but I rub my eye a lot. That could be doing it. I'm like, that's how you spread it. It's rubbing
true,
it.
True. When that's how, well, that's how you spread it. Also, that's how you catch it.
Oh, yeah.
You touch,
well, that's my
you touch a cert. Yeah, fomites, they call it. Yeah, fomites.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't say personal hygiene, like going to the bathroom. Every time I told him, every time you touch your eye, wash your hands. You know, it's also, you touch your eye, you touch a countertop, a doorknob.
Yep.
That's how everybody gets it.
The best treatment is not to touch.
Well, true, but sometimes you can't help
it. Same thing with acne in teenagers. The best thing you can tell them is to don't touch your face.
Yeah, I know. Damn dog and my shoes. Oh, did I tell you guys a funny story? Ha ha. I'm trying to muzzle train my damn dog, the puppy. I bought her a muzzle. Not the puppy, my pit. I'm sorry. Trying to muzzle train the pit so we can let them play together. That little heifer, I swear to God, I had my laptop, plastic cups, her muzzle, a brace, all kinds of shit on the coffee table. And what does she do? She finds the one and only thing that belongs to her and chewed it to hell. She chewed the whole muzzle. That's the second time she's done that. She knows it's hers, and she doesn't want to wear it. But we were told by her vet to muzzle train her because she's so reactive. And we're trying to get her to, I swear to God, I got to spawn a Chucky for a damn dog. She's just, oh, my God, retarded. I've never seen a docile dog this retarded.
get her
to CBD. It's awful. I do. And I give her a whole ML, And it's 200 milligram, and this dog is like a dog on crack. I'm making a video, and I'm going to post it for you guys to see it. She's like 35 pounds now, and she's not even 12 weeks old. She's tripled and quadrupled in size to what she was when we first got her. And she just spins in circles. She chases her tail, and she likes to bite, like nibble. My arms look like I've been attacked by a cat. No, it's her teeth. That's what yeah, it's cold outside. It was 60-something degrees today, and it's what, in the 30s now? Freaking bipolar weather. But, 33. Oh, yay. Ankle and foot sprains. Is another one. Those are very easy to get, ankle and foot sprains. From, I would say, pivoting the wrong way. Hell, I could step on a hole and sprain my ankle. I don't know. It's one of those things. Now, have you guys ever heard of double-jointed on your ankles, wrists, hips, and all this? No, you really not actually. Why do they call it double jointed to begin with?
I don't know, but they have increased range of motion.
Yeah, you can hyperextend.
Yeah, they can hyperextend or hyperflex. It just depends, but it's not technically a double joint, but that's just the nickname
I know.
For it.
I'm gonna look. Yeah. I'm gonna see why they call it that, because. It's true. And my ankles, my hips, and my wrist, it's called hypermobility. But I don't know why they call it double jointed, though. That's
that boy's double jointed.
So, yeah.
He's married to his sister. Because he's married to his sister. Limited gene pool, genetic mutations.
Yeah, it's just hypermobility, and it says it should not be taken literally, and I swear everyone's like, oh, you got two joints? No, you dumbass. It's just what they call it. My ankles, I kid you not, if you stand on your foot, right? If I could actually tip my feet to where the soles of my feet are to the inside, and stand on, and literally that's how far my ankles can hyperextend. Same thing with my wrist and my elbows and my hips. It sucks. It's not always a good thing, and everyone's like, oh, it must be great for sex. Oh, it's not. Childbirth was a bitch with hypermobility flex on my hips. It's not cool. But you can actually get hurt more and have more sprains and strains and stuff when you're with the hypermobility. Or at least that's always been my problem, because your body doesn't know when to stop. Stress fractures is another one. Thin, tiny cracks in a bone are called a stress fracture. And most frequently appear in the... Huh?
No. Shin splints... Sorry.
No, are shin splints considered the same thing as a stress fracture?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so what exactly is a shin splint? Like the shins where they get that little...
Well, you tell us what a stress fracture is.
Most frequently appear in the foot and lower leg bones, and they result from too much stress, wear, and tear. From running, usually. Because people had shin splints, or so they call them shin splints in basic, because you go from no exercise to all that running and all those ruck marches, and a lot of people ended up with shin splints.
Yeah,
so,
and from wearing boots, running in boots is one.
Oh, is
you don't
really,
have the motion.
I didn't know. I just thought it was from going from like couch potato to running and exercising and doing all of that stuff. you know, all the time.
Yeah.
Now, they say stress fractures heal themselves because the pain keeps people from putting further pressure on the injured area, unless you're in the military and then you suck it up. And you don't. Your rest comes at night when you sleep, if you can sleep. Now, they really can't do anything for a stress fracture, can they? Or can they?
Just rest and let the body heal it because it will repair itself.
Okay, so at what point let me phrase this question the right way. So a stress fracture is a tiny crack. Okay. Would that be considered the same thing as a hairline fracture?
Nope.
No? Okay. So what's the difference between the two?
The stress fractures are just like little scratches in the bone.
Oh, okay.
Where hairline fracture is a deeper scratch.
Like a gouge? If you were to gouge
maybe.
Your bone?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
You could say that.
Well, no, like I'm thinking like if you like paint on your car. If someone took a key and keys your car.
Imagine the paint of the car being heated up by the sun causing little cracks in the paint.
Okay.
That's a stress fracture. Now, if you take a key to the car, that's a hairline fracture.
Okay. See? Good analogy. See, this is why I got to, you know, dump it down for myself sometimes. Dislocated shoulders, no fun. Car accidents, contact injuries. And sports typically cause a shoulder dislocation. Hell, you could fall on your I've had a few patients, like the elderly, when they fall, they land on their hands to break their fall. One, I've seen them dislocate their shoulder, and they also break a bone at the same time, and usually it's their wrist. It's extremely painful. And it will necessitate someone to put the shoulder back in the socket, preferably a medical professional. Now, what?
Not Bobby.
Yeah, not Bobby. And not the jackass that works at Wesley Hospital, because I don't know about you, but when something's dislocated, you don't yank it.
Yeah.
You put gentle pressure. Do you really?
On the shoulder, you have to. Yeah.
You have to yank it on the shoulder? I thought you just put gentle pressure on it.
I've had to put my foot on the bed and pull the arm.
Yeah, but
pull that shoulder bed.
But pulling it and yanking it, you know what I'm saying? Like if you yank something, you're...
Regardless, it's painful.
No. Oh, I know that. But like with Pat, the nurse practitioner, he literally yanked his finger, and when he yanked it, he finished tearing the tendon off.
Well, that's different. I'm talking about a shoulder. I'm talking about a big joint, not a little finger.
Okay. So,
and I would have done a digit.
You would have to
like
do that?
Yeah, you got to put a lot of pressure to pull that shoulder back in place. A lot of times it's for kids. You grab a kid by the arm and you pick them up, and their shoulder will come out of place, or their elbow will come out of place. But
about hips?
Hips are a lot more difficult. And usually when a hip dislocates, there's going to be a fracture involved. And a hip fracture can be very debilitating.
Oh, yeah.
I would when the elderly person falls down, I'm more concerned about a hip fracture than I am a wrist fracture. Most common, I get more wrist fractures with children who are running and they fall on an outstretched wrist. So I think it's more common in children than it is in the elderly. But with the elderly, especially the osteoporotic person, the hip fracture is very, very debilitating. They end up in rehab for a couple of weeks, learning how to walk again. If they don't throw a blood clot, blood clots are real common with hip fractures.
Yeah, and the other thing is, the older you are, they give it 1 year, and I kid you not, I couldn't tell you how many times I've seen this happen. from what I've seen, anyone over 70, if they fracture a hip, if they're not up and walking or trying, you know, within 6 months or so, within 1 year, I've seen them die. Because
wow.
It goes, I don't know what it is. It's just something that I've, I don't know if it's that they gave up, but they're, you know, they're ADLs that go, you know, total care at that point. And
the quality of life.
It's like they gave up. Yeah, the quality of life is in the toilet. But a lot of the hip fractures that I've seen have come in with sprained or also fractured wrists because if they land on their hand, I've seen them.
Yep.
Yeah.
I take chronic pain very seriously because I learned the hard way. I had a patient commit suicide because of being in chronic pain. They no longer felt like the person that they used to be when they were younger, and they felt like they were not worth much in their life, and they became very depressed because of it and ended up killing themselves. And I took it personal because it was my patient. And I tried everything I could to treat this person's pain.
It is hard.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, whenever a person has chronic pain, if you're a primary care provider, really, really consider getting psychiatric evaluations.
I mean, it is because, and part of the thing is, I think it's a lot, like, you can't control. It's something in your life you can't control. You can't control getting rid of that pain. You really can't. And especially for people that are control freaks, they're like, they have to control everything about their life. And a lot of people suffer. And I wanted to slap the ever-living crap out of one of the CMAs today because she looked at me and said, stop faking it and stop limping. You know you're not in pain. And I wanted to throat punch her so hard. And I just looked at her and said, bite me. And I walked off. And I know you could joke with some people. You got to know who you're joking with. But for her to say, stop faking it, and that's one thing you don't want to say to someone who is in chronic pain.
People in the medical field are either there for the money or they're empathetic. And so you can tell the difference.
Oh, yeah. But she has absolutely zero apathy or empathy or nothing. She's just there for a job. And it's like, wow, okay, you're dealing with people who have a lot of chronic pain mentally and physically. And it's like, wow, I don't know. I'm at a loss for words for some people. I really am.
Well, some people shouldn't be in the medical field, and supervisors need to weed those people out.
That's what we're doing. And here's the problem that we face. People don't want to work. They don't want to work. And the way we've been having to deal with it, we have our two-story facility. Everyone that's capable of walking and more of their ADLs are upstairs. Anybody who's in a wheelchair, walker, cane, or whatever is downstairs. And they require more help. We throw the assholes upstairs, mostly because they only have to deal with the CMAs to get their medications, and that's it. They actually come downstairs, and that's where I'm at. We're back to one nurse, so our other nurse couldn't hack it, which is unfortunate. But they all come downstairs because they know they don't want to go upstairs and deal with their med aid because they suck. They're hateful people. And if you're like that in the medical field, you just need to quit. Find a new profession. Go work at Starbucks or McDonald's.
They pay more.
Yeah, they pay more. They pay $18 an hour.
Yeah, medical field pays $10 to $12 an hour as an MA.
Yeah, our CNAs, our nursing assistants, make $17 an hour. No, 15.
Well, that's shit.
Our CMAs make 18.
Wow, that's good. My highest paid MA in my clinic only makes $12 an hour.
Oh, wow.
That's just, that's the going rate where I live, though. I said, you'd be better off working at McDonald's because McDonald's pays more.
But it also depends on where you live, because some McDonald's are paying $25 an hour and they still can't get anybody to work. Listen, I'll go work at McDonald's for $25 an hour and
shit,
not
me
have
too.
To deal with this bullshit. Now, what's weird is and I don't know if you've seen this or heard this, I am so sick of RNs. I'm just ready to, like, whatever. Because not all RNs do this, mind you. Not all do this. Oh, an LPN's not a real nurse. Well, how about you
That's
real nurse
true.
Your ass? I've seen a lot that are like that. And I said, well, seeing as you're a real nurse, Miss RN, you go take care of and do everything for that patient. Oh, I don't know how. Well, you know what? You're the one with the education, Miss High and Mighty. You go do it.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. You know.
She probably couldn't treat the diaper rash.
No. And that's what it, now, don't get me wrong. There are some LPNs that don't need to be, and that's why we have our licensed play nurse. I want to get that shirt made, licensed play nurse. That's what I want to get. You'll know where you belong in the medical field by your attitude, because there are nurses who work strictly in doctor's offices. Like, and this is the problem we had with this last nurse. Couldn't hack it in assisted living because in a doctor's office, how long do your nurses see your patients? In all honesty, how long do they see them?
Medical assistants, the MAs?
Yeah. Yeah.
They spend the most time with my patients. I spend 5 minutes at the most. They're with the patients probably 15.
Okay. So, but think about it. Doctor's office to nursing home, hospital, assisted living. How much time? You don't really have a whole lot of time to get to know your patients because you're not going to see the same patient, unless they're a frequent flyer, and I hate calling them that, but you know what I'm saying. If they come in once a year, twice a year.
When you live in a small city, a suburb, or you live in a place, you're going to get more follow-up care.
Oh, yeah.
You can see patients every week if you want to. If you live in a rural area, that's where you're going to end up getting, you know, the difficult follow-up. You know, maybe once or twice a year. Plus, it depends on the age.
We live in Wichita's 400,000 plus. You're not going to see your patients all that often. And it's harder because even watching an ICU nurse go from ICU to hospice, they struggle because there's a difference in care between an ICU nurse and a hospice nurse.
Yep.
One screening is safe.
It depends on the experience of the nurse also. You have nurses And the worst thing you could do is not listen to an old school nurse unless they're retired on active duty.
Do what? Retired
on
active duty?
I said worst thing you could do. Yeah, we call them on the road. If you have an old school nurse who really doesn't give a shit, they're there just to get their retirement, they're not really going to do much, they're not going to be worth a shit, we call that retired on active duty, on the road, ROAD.
Those are, it's time to retire. And that's what she was.
Yeah.
She's been a nurse for 40 years. And I hate to say this, she's never done any real nursing but doctor's office. And when I say that, she made appointments. And took vital signs, and that's all she did for 40
years.
That's
a medical assistant, though. Yeah, that's not a nurse.
I know, but she was at LPN for 40 years, and that's all she did. And she ran a doctor's office, too.
So she became more administrative than hands-on. That's probably why.
Yeah, but she couldn't handle assisted living because her 50 the 50 residents upstairs, 90% of them are on psych meds. So, yeah.
Wow.
It is chaos. Oh, trust me. Now I've got 100 residents. Well, 97. Yeah. To take care of by myself. And that's to do orders twice a week when the doctor comes in, when the psych doctor comes in once a month, and any need that they have every single day, and deal with behaviors, and chart, and deal with the state. I mean, it's really, holy crap. It's one of those jobs where I'm like, if the job doesn't drive me to drink, the residents will, or the staff. That's our joke. Oh, my God. They're just going to drive me to drink. They laugh. They think it's funny. And I laugh with them. I'm like, ah, you think I'm kidding? But that's all for tonight. It's almost 9 o'clock. Holy crap. If Bobby's still awake, I guess he's sleeping.
No.
Good night, guys. Love you. We'll see you guys next time.
All right.
God bless
you next time.
Yeah, God bless you guys, and you be careful to each other. And you be nice.
You too, brother.
We try not to. I'm just kidding.
That's another great show there. Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks for staying awake, Lorna.
I'm barely. Mm-hmm. I'm falling.
God bless America. God bless our children, first responders, military, missing, our veterans, and God bless the Defender 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.